This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Beyond, and hello and welcome to a very special post-Final Fantasy State of Play episode of Beyond. If you're joining us live, we just got to see a whole bunch of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. If you're not joining us live, that's what we just got to see. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined by three of the biggest Final Fantasy fans in the LA office. Joining me from the studio, we've got Nick Lamone, Nick Maye, and Tom Jorgensen. What's up, guys? How's it going?
Beyond.
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 Beyond. That's what we're supposed to say. Okay, just so right out the gate, I want to get a feeling on this. I want to go around. What's your biggest takeaway from this presentation that we got? Because there's really, I went in with sort of high expectations, and I'm feeling a little overwhelmed at how much is going to be in this game. Nick, let's start with you, Nick Lamone.
Yeah, I think you took the words right out of my mouth. Aerith literally just put Barrett's sunglasses on and started destroying people with it. This showcase did something that I wasn't really expecting, and because, you know, after Remake leading into Rebirth, I was wondering, what else can they do to add to the game? Like, obviously, it's a little more open world now, but mechanically, what am I going to be doing? And they just showed a ton of new mechanics, whether it be all the thousands of mini games, seemingly, relationship stuff, and so much more. Like, the synergy attacks alone, I could go off on for hours on end, but what do you guys think?
Yeah, once I saw that world map, I went, oh my god, this is going to be huge. And they just, every minute, they just kept showing something new that I went, what? This game is going to be just incredible. And I love the last one, but this looks like it's just going to blow it out of the water.
So much of the focal point of this remake project for Final Fantasy VII has been centered on how are we recontextualizing this famous story that we're all so familiar with. And Rebirth so far, especially in this showcase, has shown us, like, the story is not the only thing you're coming to this game for. You want to spend time in this world. And yeah, so much of what they showed off today really reinforces that.
It's pretty fascinating, too, to see them recontextualize a lot of the PS1, like, content into, you know, a high-fidelity PS5 environment. Like, we saw a scene from what I'm assuming is Cosmo Canyon with Red 13's, like, hometown. And in the previous game, you fought a very big, giant boss that had a very, like, scary, giant floating head named Gin the Tak, and it looked like there it was like just adapted into a normal human form. So it's really fascinating to see those PS1 blocky graphics just brought to life with this, you know, the power of the PS5. It's nuts.
And literally in a few cases, some of those mini games. Yep.
I've always joked that, like, Final Fantasy VII is one of the best snowboarding games ever made, with way too many menus getting to the part where you can snowboard. But like, I didn't see that one here, but we did get certainly a huge wealth of other mini games.
Dolphin riding, importantly.
Dolphin riding, yeah. Like
the most impossible mini game from the original game, the marching band one, where it's basically impossible to pull off successfully.
I'm hoping they nerf some of the activities in this and make them a little bit more fun. But I mean, obviously, that doesn't seem to be the issue here. The thing that clicked for me about a good chunk of the way into the first, you know, into Remake was how much it kind of reminds me of Yakuza in that, you know, ultimately, like, there's the core story and there's the side quests and stuff. And then there's just like activities that are just there for fun. And it feels like they're really hitting hard on this time around. And obviously Gold Saucer is like, it's a big old arcade. Like, that's the point. That's where the fun happens. But, you know, that's not necessarily the thing that people kind of call back to with this. Kind of out the gate, which of these activities do you see yourself spending the most time in. Nick Lamone?
Just based on my PTSD alone with the Gold Saucer theme song, I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot of time there trying to min-max and get the high score and everything so I can get whatever most expensive GP item it is, because that area has its own currency in the original game, so I'm hoping stuff like that's back. But like the 3D fighting game, I caught a glimpse of that one, which was basically rock, paper, scissors in the original game. It looks a little more complicated now, so stoked to do all of the stuff in the Gold Saucer.
Yeah, and the about that 3D rock, paper, scissors game, I think it was impossible in the original. Like, you just could not beat it unless you cheated, so it'd be cool to actually beat it.
To see what happens when you end, yeah, when you finish it.
Weeks I spent as a kid just getting mad at my PS1, just like, I can't do this, you know, so. Also the dolphin minigame, in the original one, you just had to jump, from what I remember, and it looks like it's a full thing now, so excited for that.
Yeah, I think the dolphin riding is one of the things that made me the most excited when I watched this, only for how it really calls to mind the fact that they are still so focused on having fun and retaining that sort of silly aspect of the original and celebrating that in this sort of modern lens.
Yeah, that's actually a really smart point, because the original PlayStation was kind of built and centered around the idea of doing novel out there concepts with a lot of the initial launch lineup, whether that be VibRibbon, Jumping Flash, or Final Fantasy VII. And so seeing them kind of preserve that that mindset, that fun, zany, out there mindset, feels like it really is just like a snapshot in history of what PlayStation represented at that time. And now we're seeing it brought to life with, you know, in 4K.
Yeah, it really lends this air of celebration to the entire thing. Whereas as much as Final Fantasy VII is crucial to the Final Fantasy series, it is also so crucial just to the story of Sony in general.
100%.
In their gaming space, yeah.
I'm kind of blown away by all the different traversal options here. Like, I don't know. So with Remake, that was like a relatively short JRPG, which I know is something that some people kind of held against it. There's sort of the feeling that like Square Enix is kind of selling a full game piecemeal, trying to get us to buy it three times. But I'm definitely having less of that sensation this time around. This feels like they really, you know, that was something of a prologue. That was sort of the first installment. This, just from everything we're seeing here, looks like it's going to be pretty substantially hefty. And I feel like it's going to maybe quiet some of the concerns that this is being kind of chopped up and sold off in bits and pieces. Just seeing the sheer amount of different environments we're going to be exploring, and we knew that, like, at the tail end of the, you know, PS4 life cycle, like, we knew that there's stuff that they were probably trying to do with Remake that was just impossible with that hardware, and you know, the fact that the first, what was it, Intergrade, the first side story was PS5 exclusive, was kind of a nice hint that, yeah, this is going to be pushing things a little bit further. And I'm really stoked to just be properly getting an experience that is just going to have the PS5, you know, cooking on all cylinders, as we like to say around these parts. But yeah, I guess I was also you know, I was kind of expecting, like, maybe is this going to be another 30-hour installment? Is this going to be another, you know, there's areas to explore, but not like a full-blown open world experience? And I certainly have less concern about that.
Yeah, I was really worried that this game would be, you know, I love Final Fantasy 16, don't get me wrong, but I do feel that that game had a semi-open world, like, hub-like system where there was a lot of pretty things to see, but for the most part, there wasn't much to do in that world other than fight enemies. And so one thing that was really, like, a relief to me is all of the activities that it showcased in this showcase, where it showed, you know, the Assassin's Creed like towers to light up a region. It looks like there was like a specific thing where I noticed that you can get into an encounter with an enemy and it had like a list of objectives that you needed to try and pull off during that encounter. And I'm assuming there's a lot more to see. I heard the mention of something like finding proto relics and stuff like that. So I'm curious to see what all that is. And it looks like there's just a lot of stuff to do. It's not an empty, meaningless open world. It looks like there's some substance to it.
Yeah, it looks like you're gonna, besides hunting chocobos like you did in the original one, there was like a treasure map that Cloud was holding.
Oh yeah, that's like, right. Like red X's,
yeah,
all over
like,
it.
Yeah, it had like a crayon drawn chocobo in the corner, and it seems like there's gonna be a lot to do.
It looked like you could like use your chocobo to smell around and it would point out something. So curious to see where that goes.
I will say the aspect of the open world in this game that has me the most maybe cautious is what traversal is going to actually feel like. We saw a little bit in that showcase of how it works for some characters where it feels very point-based, where there are set points in the environment that may be, you know, interactable. I really want to see and get a better sense of the freedom of movement that you have outside of those interaction points and how easy it's going to be to get around. Because if you're blowing out this open world concept, you really want to make sure that you feel in power to sort of move around it freely, I think. And to see to what degree they were able to achieve that is one of the things that I'm most excited for.
Yeah, I know that that's identifying what an open world is kind of a, you know, there's room for interpretation there. And I feel like in FF15, for instance, you know, early on, I think before they patched it, like your car could only go on the roads, which is like, I mean, that's legally probably valid, you know, a valid assessment of cars, but also like if you'd get like a flying upgrade, and then if you landed it off the roads, your car would just explode and everyone would die. And I'm like, this shows a fundamental lack of understanding of why people play games where you can go anywhere and do anything. And like, I don't know, there's other games like Metal Gear Solid: The Phantom Pain is like a bunch of different areas that feel loosely connected by desert. And like sometimes we see that with games where it's like it doesn't feel like a cohesive world stitched together. It's like a bunch of stuff that you can walk between, you know, or that you can drive between. But in this case, even if the traversal and the basic navigation is, you know, leaving something to be desired, at the very least, like, we've got a lot of variety in how we can get around. Like, there's chocobos that can walk up walls. There's apparently every party member has like a different way of interacting with, you know, grappling points or whatever. And then you've got like a buggy, and you've got like the tiny Bronco and a Segway for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it just looks like there is a lot of ways. I think the thing I'm curious about is how it seemed to put, like, this presentation put a lot of emphasis on the fact that every character has their own method of being able to kind of navigate the environment. I'm curious if that's like, I can swap over to Yuffie whenever I want to use it looked like a rope swing or something like that, or if that's like going to be a, you know, you're at the Yuffie part of the main story where you're going to play only as Yuffie. I'm curious to see if they kind of take all of those character-specific mechanics and sprinkle them throughout, or if it is just, you know, like the Tifa infiltration of Shinra in Remake, where she does her faux Uncharted game to push a button. I hope it's handled a little better than that, because that was arguably one of the slowest, most painful moments of Final Fantasy VII Remake.
One area that definitely felt like it is seeing the most, you know, expansive sort of, you know, rejiggering is the synergy system in the combat.
Oh my gosh,
I'm so excited for that. That looks like it is going to be so fun, because you want these characters to feel like they have individual utility. And one of the things I enjoyed most about Final Fantasy VII Remake is that every character sort of feels powerful. And like, if you like that character's playstyle, you can spend time with that character. And the way that Rebirth seems to be really, really reinforcing the idea that you should be playing around with different characters and finding your fit is something I'm very excited for. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, it definitely is going to add to replayability, where it's like, I can just
go back to three-party members.
Yeah, and then there's also the dialogue choices, which were kind of in the original, but it wasn't highlighted because that wasn't really a thing.
It was like a hidden stat in the original
game. Yeah. So can I just play as like a chaotic, really mean Cloud the whole time? Or it just seems like there's a lot of replayability, and yeah, definitely dive back into this one probably right after I finish it.
Yeah.
I like how they gave us that glimpse of like, you can take your party members on a date to the Gold Saucer. And then it sort of shows like the different, you know, the different smiley faces over everyone's head. Can you take Red 13 on a date to a casino? Like,
this is what we need to know.
Well,
is that legal?
It said that it's characters that you couldn't previously take on a date. And I thought in the original game, you could take everybody except Red 13, if I recall. Because I know I went on the date with Barrett before. I don't recall if Yuffie's available, so maybe they're adding Yuffie and Red 13. Vincent technically wouldn't be around. I mean, based on the original game, the events in Nibelheim happen after Corel Prison and the Gold Saucer. But Yeah, I don't know.
They're moving things around a little bit on this project.
They're probably shifting things around for the sake of like scope and like better story cohesion, because that original game, honestly, this game's probably going to be longer than the original game, because I think you could finish the original game in like 45 hours. And just based on the size of Gaia that they showed here, I don't think I've ever seen a world map that high res before of Gaia from Final Fantasy VII. So that was pretty nuts, but it looked pretty expansive. Mm.
I wonder if it includes like NPCs like Chadley and those people as well. Like you can.
Oh, if they have like their own relationship to Cloud as well.
Johnny or whatever.
A random Moog that you walk by on the street.
Yeah, and one thing that I kind of noticed too in this presentation is they showed a little bit of Junon, but it looks like they're doing a pretty darn good job of kind of embellishing on a lot of the location details, because obviously when you're in the world map / open world of the original game, it's mostly just flat land with a couple rock outcroppings, and then there's your town icon where you progress the story. But in this game, it looks like they're adding a lot more detail to Junon. Like I saw like a pirate ship that was wrecked off to the side, and it just seems like it's a more lived in authentic space, which was just really exciting to see, as them kind of just building on the world of Gaia a lot more, which is really, really cool.
Yeah.
Now this game looks like how you remember the cutscenes looking as a kid, you know, like it's totally that. Just, you know, we always like, oh yeah, like hindsight is 2020 and the rose tinted glasses of nostalgia, but I feel like this is really using that high bar as a target. Like that's what they're aiming for, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's great. I'm really excited about this. Like it's clearly a massive sprawling undertaking. And yeah, I mean the remake was really good, but it did definitely, you know, there were areas where it left something to be desired. It feels like this is really expanding on that. Early on in this presentation, I said something about how, like, you know, if they don't spoil stuff in the end game, is it really a JRPG trailer? You know, like is the game really coming out in 3 weeks if they don't spoil a bunch of late game stuff? And do we know officially where Rebirth ends in the grand scheme of things? Have they said that?
I could have swore they said that the game ended at the Temple of the Ancients. I could have swore that there was some, like, you know, quote from Kitase that talked about, like, we're going to end at the Temple of the Ancients, which is where you, you see the pyramid-like structure that the Cetra belonged to. But based on what we saw in this trailer, they teased the Forgotten Capital with the whispers, like, surrounding the Forgotten Capital, which is where a very important Final Fantasy VII event happens. So, and it seems like that's what they're building up to. So I would assume the Forgotten Capital is where this game ends. But I am curious. I'm not trying to jump ahead. I didn't check the itinerary for this podcast, but do we think that this game is going to have the same major moment as the original game?
I don't think it possibly can. How do you, so much, even in this showcase, so much of that narration always kept coming back to, you know, and
it's
I'm quoting.
Nudge, nudge.
Yeah. They're calling a lot of attention to what is gonna happen with Aerith in this game. And I think that it seems pretty likely that they can't just do the exact same thing that Final Fantasy VII did, that some major part of that has to change. And there was a line from the showcase that really caught my ear about Genova sort of taking the form of anybody, and Cloud sort of devolving into suspicion about, you know, who, you know, I think it was Tifa.
He was getting aggressive towards Tifa with his Buster Sword.
So I think that is a very interesting story point that I'm definitely going to be keeping a close eye on, because, you know, maybe Cloud swings his sword in a direction that he regrets later. Who knows?
And they got to explain why Zack is in the game.
Yeah.
And why Zack is holding Aerith outside of Midgar.
Yeah, something that we've never seen before.
Do you need two sword boys in a Final Fantasy VII game?
I would lose my mind if... Well, like, okay, that's actually an interesting point, because they've already shown a trailer footage of Cloud and Sephiroth fighting side by side in the Nibelheim chapter, right? So what if that's like a little tease that you're going to be able to do stuff like that again with another sword character? So is it possible for whatever timeline nonsense to overlap once again? Because as we saw at the end of Remake, there's very clearly two different timelines based on Stamp, which is the Shinra propaganda dog. So take a look at what that is if you don't know what I just said.
I wonder.
Well, it's
if
also you're... like they're subverting expectations. Like this is not a straight remake. This is embellishing. This is revisiting. This
it has multiple definitions. It is a remake in multiple senses of the word.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I wonder if you're gonna be able. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say, I wonder if you're gonna be able to go into the basement after Vincent's out, and then go through a whole Zach flashback later, or is that gonna be cut out?
Or Dirge of Cerberus, for that matter. Like, cause yeah. I mean, intermission already brought like Vice the Immaculate, and I can't remember the other dude's name, the one with the he's all bandaged up and harnessed. Nero. Yeah, there you go. Nero and Vice have already been established in intermission, so that means Dirge of Cerberus is kind of in the context here. So not kind of, it is. So how are they gonna work that, you know, obscure PS2 game into this, you know, flagship PS5 title? It's nonsense.
Is a third Sword Boy going to show up with red hair?
Too many Sword Boys.
Yeah, does that mean Genesis is going to show up? Because again, they re-released Reunion, which is the remaster of the Crisis Core, the PSP game that was very heavily centered around Genesis, was still using the same character model as Gak. So, like, I don't know, they probably had to pay some sort of likeness fee for using this J-pop actor's face. So, surely he's in these games at some point. I don't know.
I was actually thinking a lot about this today because my endpoint to Final Fantasy in general was Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy VII through Kingdom Hearts. I found my way in through the back door. So one of the things that I was thinking about is that this story really, you know, this expansion of the Final Fantasy VII narrative really started with compilation of Final Fantasy VII around 2005 when Advent Children came out.
Right.
And that was at a time a few years before the MCU kicked off, and certainly long before the idea of multiverses really sort of took hold in pop culture. And the way that these different stories, these Final Fantasy VII stories, have sort of been cropping up in the last, you know, 15, 20 years, and the way that Square is sort of celebrating all of it within, or they have the freedom to celebrate all of it within this new project, is one of the things that got me most excited for Remake and Rebirth in the first place. Mm-hmm. To see, you know, which, am I gonna get Advent Children lore brought forward into Rebirth or whatever the third one is? You know, fingers crossed, because love that movie.
Yep, very well said. Honestly, if I can play that cinematic Sephiroth boss fight from Advent Children as an actual playable thing,
yes,
I think everybody would lose their mind.
That sounds good. I mean, it's kind of wild how, like, for the longest time, like, Final Fantasy was, like, each one was its own little capsule universe. Like, they're all, there is no one definitive Final Fantasy. It's like a, you know, there's not, and they're not connected. You know, there's weird overlapping stuff. But I feel like at this point, Final Fantasy VII itself has become so big that it's almost like a Final Fantasy within a Final Fantasy, where it goes in different directions. It's got like a, you know, various interpretations, sort of meta timelines. Like the fact that, like, you've got low poly models of the characters in this, of the original in this, is like such a weird wink and a nod. And it's, I don't know, it's cute. And it's, I wouldn't be surprised if we got them drawing bits and pieces here and there. I was going to ask, you know, obviously we've got a lot to look forward to with just Rebirth alone. But looking ahead, two questions. One, how many sort of side stories, like, you know, interstitial things? Like we got Intergrade and we got the Crisis Core remake between Remake and between this, or in this. Do we think we're going to get two more installments that kind of hold the time until the third, you know, the final end piece of Final Fantasy VII Remake project? And also, what do we think they're going to call the third remake installment? I feel like it's gotta be an R. It's gotta be an R
Art-y,
name,
right?
But they already used Reunion on Crisis Core. So, like, what do we? What's the word?
I'm going with Revival. Revival.
Yeah. That's what I would have went with.
That's good. My guess was Revenge. You know, going back to the idea of, you know, maybe that moment from the end of this one's gonna change. Maybe there's
Revenge
some...
combined with Vengeance.
Huh.
Revenge.
No one would ever name a game such a cool word. It's too cool.
Get that hashtag going.
Maybe Restore.
Restore? Like that. Ooh, that's pretty good too.
Gotta restore the timeline.
Mm-hmm. I dig it.
I like that. I feel like Revenge is too aggro, you know?
Yeah.
It's gonna be the big grand finale. Like, Yeah.
There's no room for aggro in a game with a 6-foot sword slung on the main character's back at all times.
All the aggro's in the sword. You don't need any more, you know. I feel like there's also a whimsy you need to have, and like revenge is like too, like, it's too try hard, you know?
Yeah.
Redux, the REDUX? That feels a little too safe, but that feels like a thing that I would see as a subtitle for a game like this.
That's what they'll call the PlayStation 7 version.
The Final Fantasy redo.
What about Final Fantasy 7 Red Dead Redemption 2?
Oh, perfect.
They'll get all the open, perfect open world. Redemption?
Final Fantasy 7 Reloaded. No, wait. They're going to make Dirge of Cerberus as a game, and it's going to be called Final Fantasy 7 Dirge of Cerberus Reloaded.
This 100%. This is actually when coming back to what we originally were talking about what are they going to do between Rebirth and the third game. Yeah, it feels like a Dirge of Cerberus remake.
Like maybe not a remake. I wonder if it would be a DLC episode, but I think it would be, I don't think that there's any reason to do a Dirge of Cerberus remake. I love Dirge of Cerberus, don't get me wrong. I replayed it recently. But I think what they could do is adapt Dirge of Cerberus, because we already got a glimpse of content from Dirge of Cerberus in Intermission. So I wonder if they'll take story beats from Dirge of Cerberus that are important to Vincent's backstory and give them the Final Fantasy VII remake treatment, where they are playing in the same combat system as the main game.
What's the anime with Zack?
That was Before Crisis?
I believe. Or is that the mobile game?
I forget.
The mobile where you're the Turks.
There's a lot.
Crisis is the flip phone Turks game. Yeah. I forget what the anime is, but it's like a 30-minute OVA that's gorgeous. But it's the story that we've already...
Last Order.
There you go. Yeah, Last Order. That's the one that we kind of already have the story of via Crisis Core.
Yeah, I guess.
So that's why it's important to play Crisis Core.
But yeah, if they're looking to find some stuff to, you know, fill in some space between the now and the final installment, there's definitely stuff to pull from, and you know, kind of remains to be seen when that big last final installment will come. Now, while we're still talking, you know, FF7.2 or whatever, Rebirth, do we think that the third installment is going to land on PS5?
I don't know.
No?
It's hard to say. I mean, like, they have so much development put into Rebirth, so many resources put into Rebirth, that it wouldn't necessarily shock me if the third installment ended up being the sort of swan song for the PS5, or maybe even like we saw, you know, Breath of the Wild, for instance, do kind of acting as a bridge between
the Wii U
and the Switch. Yeah, I could see something similar happening when the PS6 version maybe gets, you know, a higher fidelity graphics or 17K or whatever we're up to at that point.
Yeah, Max, we were talking about this earlier just before we were live, but you had mentioned that, you smartly pointed out that when Remake came out, it came out in 2020 on the PS4, and then a year later, we got a PS5 version with Intermission included as the PS5 only content. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw something, a pretty similar cadence for whatever the third game ends up being called. But I do think that if we do get DLC for this game, I think it will be on the PS5.
Yeah.
Where did Remake launch relative to the launch of the PS5? Like, how far?
A year later. Or so
it was 2020.
Or PS4. I'm sorry. The PS4.
That was May 2020?
Yeah, it was
a few months.
But I mean, like, on the PS4.
It was like 2 weeks after Cyberpunk.
Yeah, that's the date.
In my head.
But it was roughly 4 years after the PS4 came out that Remake came out,
yes,
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. So 4 years into the life cycle, and then how far are we into PS5? We're
3 years?
Yeah. So roughly the same. So yeah, I guess it could go either way.
I don't know if there's a PS5 Pro in the works, but maybe that would be the right candidate for whatever DLC chapters included with this, or even the final game. But I do think you're going to be able to experience the entire Final Fantasy VII Remake saga on PlayStation 5 from beginning to end.
I guess 10 discs.
I guess it comes down to
you're going to be able to scoop up the definitive Final Fantasy VII complete version on PS6, and it's going to be... Like, it's probably going to be like a $100 game, but it's probably also going to be like a 400-hour game. So, I, you know,
it'll ship on a solid state drive.
Yeah. But it'll have a picture of Cloud on it. So it'll work. Yeah. Anyway, so there are a lot of JRPGs dropping this year. It's actually kind of amazing how much is coming down the pipe. I want to take a look ahead at just some of the big JRPGs dropping this year, in addition to Final Fantasy VII, Rebirth. We've already gotten a few really huge ones. Just last week we got Persona 3 Reload. A day before that, we got Granblue Fantasy Relink, and then there was Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth, which I'm still chipping away at slowly. Like a Dragon of Persona, IGN gave those 9s out of 10. They have low-end 87% on Metacritic. Granblue Fantasy's 81% Metacritic. We're a little over 2 months into the... We're a month into the year, and there's already, three awesome JRPGs, and then we've got a few weeks until Rebirth, which looks like another huge, massive installment. I want to kind of just look ahead at everything that's on the way after that, because I feel like everyone hyped up 2023 as being this, absurd sort of second coming of big games. And I don't think it's over. I think especially kind of coming out of Japan, there's a lot of really big stuff coming down the pipe. So this episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Which of you are playing, Nick? I know you're playing Yakuza. Are you still playing it?
I finished Yakuza. I finished Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth. I poured 60 plus hours into it. Honestly, it's so far it's my current game of the year. But I don't, hopefully that gets dethroned with Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. But it's gonna have. Infinite Wealth is putting up a strong fight from beginning to the end of the year. I think it is such an astounding game, both RPG and story-wise, that's hitting all the emotional beats. I think whether you're a lifelong Yakuza fan or not, I think that there's so much that you can get from Infinite Wealth. It is, like Rebirth, it looks like it's going to be, it is a game that is very generous, and I hope that Rebirth can follow in that same vein.
Too much game is a good problem to have. Nick, mm-hmm. Maya, Tom, are you guys playing Yakuza at all, or Like a Dragon?
It's on my to-do. It's just, right now, it's not enough time to play all these games. I know Final Fantasy is pretty close, so
that's your priority.
I hate ending, leaving a JRPG especially, mm-hmm. and then just coming back 6 months later and going, what am I doing?
I will say, all these people.
Yeah.
JRPGs aren't necessarily a genre that I'm super fluent in or familiar with, but I will say that two things on Like a Dragon here. Number one, the degree to which infinite wealth has been talked up around the office in recent days is really significant in a way that, you know, few JRPGs kind of make it through to me, but this one really feels like everyone is so excited about it, and I'm very interested. I mean, look, this is not a hard sell for me, beating
there's some
beating
oil
the hell
man
out of,
carrying inflatable things.
Yeah, tall clowns. This looks like it, chapter three. But the thing that has me very interested is the fact that Danny Trejo plays a character in the game, and that is enough to get me, that's almost enough to have me cross the JRPG divide and be like, what's Machete up to right now? What's that
You'll
guy
doing?
You'll
never guess what weapon he wields in that game. You'll never guess in a million years possibly have in his hands. No, it's a big one. I also think it's really funny how there's this sort of like cross purposes with FF7, because like FF7, I feel like it's taking a traditional turn-based JRPG and injecting it with a level of reality, but also
there's a real estate mini
combat. There's probably real estate. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in there. It's got like a lot of just. They're doing a lot to take this incredibly like, you know, grandiose out there thing and kind of like make it relatable and down to earth. Meanwhile, you know, Yakuza, which is historically a real time beat 'em up series, has suddenly been injected with a bunch of JRPG over the topness to it. Like, I mean, you know, Yakuza has always been over the top, but like you said, there's now like 9-foot-tall clowns that you fight in dungeons. Like, they're kind of swapping live streams or something or other.
Out of context, Max, what is your favorite weird thing that you have seen in Like a Dragon Infinite Wealth so far?
There are these random dudes scattered around the world, and they're just like NPCs, and you go up to them and they're like, hey, have you heard? And you go, yes, I've heard. And if you say yes, they're like, okay, good. And if you say no, I haven't, and they're like, hamburgers are delicious. And that's it. That's all they say. They don't say anything else. And you're just like, what is the point of this?
This is a microcosm for talking to people who are into JRPGs. Like, do you like hamburgers? Like, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like this may be a little bit of a statement on American dietary customs and whatnot, but like, you know, whatever, I'll take it. I will be amazed if I manage to finish that game by the time, you know, Rebirth drops. But yeah, there's also Persona 3 Reload, which people seem to really adore. Are any of you messing with this at all?
I need to take a break with Reload because I just recently replayed Persona 3 FES not too long ago, and I'm like, Final Fantasy's ahead, but what about you?
I downloaded it because I had it on the PSP back in the day, but I played it right after I beat Persona 4 Golden, which took me a million hours. So I wasn't too into it because it definitely is a step back from the previous.
A lot of quality of life improvements are missing from it.
And for me, it's one of those, like, again, if Final Fantasy wasn't coming out so soon, I would just only play Persona. But I'm like, I'm gonna do that after. So it's gonna sit on my Xbox for months.
I think that, like, you know, this is my personal bias, so take that for what you will. I think Persona 3 has the best Persona story game of the new generation of Persona games. Persona 2 is also fantastic, which is apparently rumored to be getting a remaster / remake soon. So fingers crossed, because that's the one people should actually play. But Persona 3 is without a doubt my favorite of the modern versions. And now that it has the Persona 5 Royal coat of paint on it, it makes a game that was a lot more inscrutable and higher barrier to entry to play, Persona 3 FES I'm talking, or Persona 3 Mobile, or not mobile, portable. This game is so much easier to get into now because for the most part, there's a lot of new Persona fans, which is wonderful. Their first game is Persona 5 Royal. This is a great like transition to play some of the older games because all the quality of life stuff is there, and now you get a better story.
Well, I would hope they would nail it this time, because by my math, this is the fourth or fifth time that they have re-released Persona 3 with some additional bells and whistles. Because there was the original, there's Persona 3, there was Fest, there was Persona 3 Portable, and then there was
the four movies.
Oh God, yeah, then there's also the recent sort of Switch port, or the, you know, Switch generation port, which is on other stuff too, which came out like what, last year? And then they're just like, just kidding, we remade the whole thing. So like, they really, I mean, and then now they're like, we're not going to do a Persona 3 Royal or Golden or whatever. Don't worry about it. We're not going to do it. I'm like, I don't know, man. You've really like fooled me four times. Shame on you.
Persona 3 Reload is notably missing the FES, the answer side story, which is like the thing that was new to FES. So I wouldn't be surprised if they added the answer as a downloadable piece of content. I would hope so. But then again, that's a thing that you need to actually... I would recommend you finish Persona 3 first before you jump into the answer, because you're expected to start the answer at level 50, if I recall correctly.
Well, in 10 years, well, you can take your time. Persona 3 Rebirth.
Persona 3 Rebirth, yeah. The redo.
Persona 3
okay,
Make.
Okay, so then looking at the sort of the calendar of JRPGs, then... After we didn't even touch on Granblue, but Granblue is obviously the console kind of version of the mobile game, which people seem to like. Okay, our reviewer seemed to really think they did a good job of kind of shaving off the, you know, mobile-y gacha elements in a really unintrusive way, so it actually feels like a, you know, proper experience, not just like a, you know, drag and drop kind of port. So that's good. So you've got those. There's FF7 Rebirth. Obviously, we've talked about that extensively. Jump ahead about a month, there is sort of this triple threat coming on March 22nd. There's Dragon's Dogma 2, Rise of the Ronin, and then there's the Legend of Legacy Remastered. The first two we've talked about a bit on the show, but there's also Legend of Legacy is a 3DS game from a while back that I dug into it a little bit. I'm not super well versed on it, but I think the hook is that it doesn't have like a standard experience system. You've got like, you know, seven party members and their stats increase based on what they're doing, I think, but also semi-randomly.
Was it a PlayStation? No, it was a 3DS game, you said, right?
Yeah.
Legend of Legaia is what I think it might have been released as originally. I don't know. Maybe I'm just getting two games confused, but hey, if it's a remake of something and I haven't checked it out, I might as well check it out.
Yeah. I mean, if you run out of JRPGs already, but... Yeah, so that's one I hadn't heard of prior to kind of pulling this list together. But then there's also obviously the two big ones are Dragon's Dogma 2, which is the, you know, first full sequel to the, you know, Capcom's big open world action RPG where you can climb on top of golems and stuff and poke them in the eyeball and you have your weird AI controlled pawns. And then there's Rise of the Ronin, which is Team Ninja's, you know, open world samurai souls like type thing in the vein of probably Neo and Wolong Fallen Dynasty. I feel like that's both like totally new thing, but also kind of a known quantity, which is a good thing again. Which of these three games dropping on the exact same day do each of you think you'll go towards?
I mean, I don't know what we did to deserve a Dragon's Dogma 2, but I'm gonna be there day one, 100%. I love the original Dragon's Dogma, and this just looks better in every single conceivable way while also looking like the same, which is a feat that I don't really know how they pulled off, mm-hmm. but consider me intrigued and excited.
Yeah, it's Dragon's Dogma for me as well. I've been watching all the IGN first stuff for it. I'm like, this looks awesome. So,
yeah.
You guys are cool. You can hang out more. Tom, what about you?
Oh, well, I'm going to have to hit the bricks because I'm going to say Rise of the Ronin. I've been really kind of diving into Souls games in the last few years, and I enjoyed Neo, so I'm psyched to see what this one.
It looks like an Elden Ring Neo to some extent. Obviously, in like a more quote unquote realistic feudal Japan. But like I saw in that previous PlayStation State of Play, where I saw him using like the kite to fly around, and then he just seamlessly transitioned to a horse, and I was like, yeah, this looks great. This looks awesome. It's not feudal Japan, apparently. It's a little more modern. I forgot about that. 1858. There you go. But yeah, still looks awesome.
There's a lot to go on there. Now, there's also, jumping ahead about a month after that, there's also a Yuden Chronicles 100 Heroes, which is the sort of Suikoden spiritual successor. We've got one of the Kickstarter's backers right here, Nick Lamont. What do you have to say about
this? Dude, I Kickstarted this game like whenever they announced their Kickstarter, which was like, I think 5+ years ago, and it looks like it's finally coming out. They gave us like an interim game called Aiden Chronicle Rising, which was like a side-scrolling like action RPG, but Aiden Chronicle 100 Heroes just looks like, hey, look, Suikoden is one of the like all-time greats, and this just looks like the natural successor, a la what's it called, like the Koji Iga, the Igadashi Igavania's Symphony of the Night to
Bloodstained.
Yeah, this looks in that same vein, where it's going from, you know, Suikoden to Aiden Chronicles as Symphony of the Night is to Bloodstained Ritual of the Night.
I love the art.
It's actually
style.
It's the third highest Kickstarter aside from Bloodstained and Shenmue 3. So it's a lot of people supported this one. So it's kind of cool that it's finally dropping.
They had to kill the Vita version. I remember that being a Kickstarter backer I got one day.
That's like, why I pulled out my Kickstarter. Thank RP. You.
They're like, well, I'm so sorry, we can't make a Vita version of this game. I was like, yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Sorry, Nick Maya, go ahead.
I was just saying, I love the art style on this. I love this like retro, but also very modern look that we're seeing on a bunch of games, like Live Alive had it as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually probably gonna make me interested in playing it because I just like that look.
Yeah, it's pretty unique, and like it's not quite that HD 2.5 HD a la Octopath Traveler, but it's still in that same vein, and it looks like refreshingly different from that, which I'm a big fan of, because don't get me wrong, I love the 2.5 HD look, but I like the idea of people like, I like that, let me do something a little bit different.
And leaning slightly less into the sort of pixely mm-hmm. look, you know, while maybe retaining that perspective and
yeah.
kind of feel.
It's really pretty.
Now, one game that's kind of harkening back to a beloved pixel entry is Visions of Mana, which is the first mainline game in the Mana series in 15 years. My first exposure to that was Secret of Mana, which is what, I think Seiken Densetsu 3?
Seiken Densetsu 2.
Is that 2? And then 3 never came out states? Is that the deal?
Yeah, 3 was the one that eventually got a 3D version called Trials of Mana.
There we go. Okay. See, my favorite is Secret of Evermore, which is
dude,
like
Secret of Evermore is my favorite too.
Secret of Evermore, that was when there was like Squaresoft USA and they were like, hey, can we borrow your engine and then make something that's, I feel like, more akin to a LucasArts game, but mm-hmm. has, you know, that'll be cool to see. That's, I don't know, like I have a fondness for that big stupid tree and those little Cabots, and like they showed off some gameplay and you can just ride around the overworld on this animal that just looks like a giant version of my dog, which is just like the greatest fantasy for me, just riding around a giant Pomeranian and fighting monsters and stuff. So I'm excited for that. That one doesn't have a release date yet, but that is coming out at some point this year. They showed it off the Xbox presentation thingamajig. There was another big entry, which is, again, this is such a hard thing to sort of gauge. Does this count as a new JRPG or is this DLC? But Final Fantasy 14 is getting another massive, huge installment with Dawn Trail? Did I spell it right? Did I write Dawn Trail?
A C.S. Lewis entry.
Yes.
Dawn Trail, head of the trail crime family.
Dawn Trail, correct?
Yeah, so that's dropping. People, you know, the people who play FF14 will play that. Do you play? Are you an FF14 guy?
Guy, I'm the final. I gotta play all things Final Fantasy. But I would say I was always a little bit apprehensive about getting into 14 because it is an MMO, and I am not an MMO guy. But you can basically play all of them as all the main game plus all of the expansions, and they're basically their own standalone Final Fantasy game with their own complete arc. So I'm still not completely caught up. I'm at Shadowbringer right now, which means I'm Shadowbringers, Endwalker, and now Dawn Trail.
Fake fan. Thought you were up to date, man. What are you doing on here?
I'm three behind.
You're on top of this.
I'm three behind.
I love that there's just, I mean, I was talking about how sort of FF7 is like a little pocket, like a pocket Final Fantasy dimension, but it's like, no, that's 14. Like they have, how many expansions is this?
Realm Reborn, there's Heavensward, Stormblood.
Okay. Anyway, so clearly that's a thing. Another big sort of question mark this year in the JRPG department, for anybody who's played Persona 3 5 times and is looking for something new and fresh, there's Metaphor ReFantazio, which is maybe the most fun game title to say this year. This is the creative leads of Persona 3, 4, and 5, and one of the mecha designers for Evangelion, which kicks ass, and this is going to be sort of Atlas's big third benchmark entry in their, you know, fantasy, or they're in the RPG department. And this one is, I think, going more strictly fantasy. Is this grabbing any of you? What's the vibe on this one?
So kind of weird, but I really like the menus they've shown in this.
Dude, they're gorgeous.
When I first saw the game, I was like, okay, that's cool. And then I saw those menus and I went, I kind of want to check it out now. It's really weird that that's what's drawing me in, but yeah, it looks rad.
It looks like Atlas is going back to like the Shin Megami Tensei side of the Persona franchise with Metaphor ReFantazio, which I'm very excited about because, you know, it is I think, a lot more adult-oriented, whereas Persona, I know Persona has a lot of adult themes in it, but for the most part, Persona is about high schoolers, whereas this one just feels more about, like, a post-apocalyptic-esque world with very inventive designs. And also, one thing I didn't know about this that I learned recently is there you can do real-time, like, action combat, or you can segue into and transition into turn-based combat at will. So you can kind of choose how you want to approach combat scenarios in this game, which is pretty exciting.
It's just so stylized too. It's just
Gorgeous menus. Awesome. Shoji Meguro is doing the music as well. So, you know, famed SMT and Persona composer. So you know you're going to be listening to the soundtrack for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. I was sort of, I'm fussy about like, you know, UI and fonts and art direction and stuff. But this is definitely growing on me. They really just, they're graphic designing the hell out of this thing. They're really, like, a lot of fonts, a lot of good fonts going on there. Now, finally on this list, there's also Blue Protocol, which is sort of an unknown quantity right now. People are excited for it. It was announced at the Game Awards a couple years ago.
That's the Amazon one, right?
Yeah, it's Amazon Games and Bandai Namco, and it's an online action RPG where I mean, it's, people seem stoked for it. People are, you know, intrigued, but I think also sort of skeptical because it is like an online thing, but it's got that, you know, that sleek, you know, JRPG anime aesthetic to it, and you and your friends can fight some monsters and stuff online. So there's definitely, you know, if you're up to date on, you know, Final Fantasy 14, unlike some people, Nick, I guess you can jump in there and do some stuff. That's supposed to come out sometime this year. I don't think they have a release date on that, unlike, you know, like a half the list here. But yeah, it's a big year. There's a lot of stuff coming out in this department.
It really feels like we're in like a heyday of like a JRPGs, and I know that in recent years that's been a lot of a very sensitive word for a lot of Japanese developers coming from, you know, the Square Enix staff specifically. But I'm just excited that it felt like for the longest time we weren't really getting them, or they weren't getting the kind of notoriety or time to shine in the spotlight as they once did in the late 90s, early 2000s. But now it feels like, you know, anime has become more and more prolific. It is no longer this, you know, obscure thing that only a couple people at your school watch. It's now a thing that's just an everyday fact of life. So that kind of goes hand in hand with JRPGs being a thing that people just like nowadays. And Persona, the fact that you can cosplay as a high schooler in a Persona game is just like a thing that people are excited about a new game for. So, like, hey, I welcome it all, and I'm so happy that we are in this heyday.
Of the games on this list, which of them has your sort of hype meter at the highest? It's kind of a trick question because we just saw a bunch of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, so it's sort of
Rebirth is clearly my you know, the one for me. But I think Eiyuden Chronicles and I think Metaphor ReFantazio. I think Metaphor ReFantazio is exciting because it looks like it's gonna be the nitty gritty hardcore RPG that I've been kind of hungry for since SMT4 and SMT5.
Excluding Rebirth, obviously. Like a Dragon, Infinite Wealth, really, just the more I see it, hearing you guys talk about everything, it just seems like a game that's made for me.
Yes, yes.
And I'm not even going to caveat it. I'm just going to say Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. I'm just going to say that. I'm stoked to try out Rise of the Ronin, but like Rebirth is part two of a three-part story that I've been waiting almost 20 years to experience again from the beginning. And I think the way they've done it so far is so cool and really connotes this love for this specific area of the franchise. I also love it, and we didn't really touch on this, but I also love that we're getting a demo and a half. I don't remember the last time I ever heard about a demo and a half.
Where they updated the demo like halfway through, because that's what made the original remake so, like, the wait for remake so insufferable, is they released that demo that was just the opening bombing mission, and then it was like, all right, you got a taste, it comes
have
out.
Have fun, kids.
And this one, they are doing that, it looks like they are doing the Nibelheim bit with Cloud and Sephiroth, and then they're going to update the demo later on to also feature the open world from Junon. Like, that's kind of cool, and it gives you, you know, it makes the wait a little more sufferable.
It's like Sony is trying to trick us into downloading the game parts at a time because they're worried it's just going to crush our hard drives.
I think the last time a demo updated was Resident Evil 7, I believe, because I know there was like updates throughout the demo.
Was there really? I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, and that was different because it would be like, oh, there's something.
That was also a prologue. The Resident Evil 7 was a prologue to the actual game. Yeah, yeah, wow, that's great memory.
Well, we should probably wrap this up so we can go play that demo and actually, you know, I don't even, I'm sure a lot of people are way ahead of us in downloading that. You might have to clear off some hard drive space based on how that game looks in action. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming up by and hanging out and talking about Final Fantasy. This has been a pleasure and a delight. I wish I was there in the room with you, but this has been fun. This has been a good time. Before we go, I want to give a quick shout out that the IGN store is reopening orders for the Skyrim vinyl soundtrack. I know it's no Final Fantasy VII soundtrack, but that, you know, the Fusro Da with a bunch of Dragonborn monks shouting into a concert hall or whatever. Pretty dope. So check that out. That's over on store.ign.com, I believe. Orders are open on Thursday, the 8th. It sold out really fast last time. And, you know, if that's a thing that, you know, gets your Argonian maid all riled up, go check it out. On that note, thank you all for joining us. This has been a very special sort of live episode of Beyond. We'll be back next week with more of the usual crew and more stuff to talk about. I'm Max. You can find me on various forms of social media, Max Scoville. Nick, where can people find you? Nick Lamone, let's start with you.
I'm at Advent Nick everywhere.
At Nick Meteor Rain.
You got a Final Fantasy username. Nick Meteor Rain.
He's also got a Final Fantasy username.
I love it. You guys belong here. And then Tom, what about you? How Final Fantasy is your username?
It's at Tom Cloud Strife _Jordan.
Oh, man. Good materia, everybody. This really just really... Thank you, guys. It's been a treat. I will see you later. Have a good night, everybody, and beyond.
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 Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And, spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.